Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical. Come get up.
Beware, I live. IGN Games Coop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis,
Scoop.
Sam Claiborne,
hey, everybody.
And clearly Canadian CJ Gibson is
What's
back.
Up?
You know, we used to call Charles Ognette the Raging Canadian.
Yes, I remember that.
How do you remember that?
Because I watched a lot of Game Scoop before. I know Charles.
Yeah, I did too, but I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think that Charles is never coming back to Game Scoop, though.
So,
maybe this title will be.
I appreciate this.
Given to CJ.
Did Charles burst into the wall?
The Kool-Aid man?
I wish. I wish Charles would burst in here.
Did
right
Charles
now.
Enjoy that nickname? Did he embrace it?
Well, like you, he had a hell of a temper.
Oh, right. Yeah,
well, sure. Very we'll temperamental see. Guy.
Charles didn't enjoy much, and I say that as a friend.
Yeah.
We've got a great show for this week. Nintendo announced a whole bunch of more awesome indie games coming to Switch. Mm-hmm. One of them that we were just talking about last week from Justin, which he really liked.
Called it.
We've
wait,
got
that game is yeah. going to be out on Switch. Okay,
yeah.
Cool. We'll talk
That's
about
coming too. We've got lots of listener mail to get through. But first, Resident Evil 2 should be out now by the time you are listening or watching this. And that game is awesome. I think everybody out there should play it.
Yeah.
Of course, I reviewed it. You may have seen in my review, I actually got something wrong about the game. I misunderstood the way you unlock the different modes, so that was embarrassing. But everyone was super nice about it. Mm-hmm. Everyone said, it's cool, we all make mistakes. Mm-hmm. So we issued a correction, we updated the review, bumped up the score just a little bit because what I had thought had been a problem with the game actually wasn't. And then everyone moved on with their lives, and now we can all just enjoy this great game. Sam, you've also beaten, who you played through, Cleon, or Cleon.
I played the Klingon playthrough.
The new game.
Cleon and, yeah.
That's their mode.
First you played through...
It's their couple's name.
You played through Claire first.
Yeah, I played through Claire, and then I played Leon's game B, and it's so hard and scary that I can't go much further.
It is very, very scary. It's legitimately scary. Maybe too scary for Justin.
Oh, not yeah. the main
no,
game.
You don't need, there's no maybe about it.
The second way.
I was freaked at E3. I couldn't finish. The demo was timed, and I'm like, nah. And he's like, you don't like it? And I'm like, I've seen enough.
Yeah. So did you actually play the demo recently, or was it just at E3?
E3.
Played it at like you know we go after we're talking about.
Yeah,
I was the same. Like I'm. It's funny. I love Mortal Kombat for what it is, but I am not a huge gore guy. And so when I was playing that game, I don't know how many times I would go into a little crevice scenario, and I'm like,
yeah.
And I'm like, I know I'm on a hard turn left here. There's got to be something behind me. And yeah, I don't know if I can get through that game.
I love the horror and the scare stuff. It's my favorite part about the game.
Yeah.
And it works because it's also an action game.
Yes.
So like the original games for me, where they don't work, like one and two, like standard, is that it's scary and it's cool. But then it's so easy to die because your aiming is just up or down, and tank controls and stuff. In this game, you have so much control over your gun,
and the shooting feels really good.
It does,
and it looks good.
It does.
It's
the zombies. Like,
every shot does something.
Yeah. So damageable and deformable. Like you can shoot through their hands, blow their hands off, blow off parts of their face, and like they're really juicy. Like they
gross.
they leak all this like really shiny bright red blood.
And there's the way like you need to hit them in the head. You don't have the ammo to screw this up.
Yep.
And as soon as you miss a shot, you have a really good chance of mixing the next one because you're up to correct it.
Yeah.
And it's just so fun to watch people play. Even I played forever. Like I can play this game well, and I played a lot of Resident Evil 4. I 100%ed it, did all the mercenary stuff.
Nice.
But like I screw up, and when I screw up, it just cascades, it just gets worse and worse. Zombies on top of you.
Downhill.
I love that about this game. And I like playing it on its higher difficulties. It's like it's scary and difficult, and you have the resources though to make it work.
Yeah. It's like real survival horror where you feel like you always have just barely enough ammo.
You always have 6 bullets. That's what you were saying.
I mean, or less. Yeah, fewer.
Yeah.
But that's cool though. I like the old school games that felt a little bit like a trial and error thing, or there was some. I feel like a lot of the new games, they don't give you that flavor. It's like, oh, you can just do what you want and it's fine. And
this
and that's
is one of
cool.
those games
I like that.
Where the trial and error is a total part of it, because I think. Yeah. The main, I've said this about Fallout before, so you might have heard this, but the main, I think, gameplay mechanic in Resident Evil is saving. And you can save at a typewriter.
That's how you describe Symphony of the Night also.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. All those games. I love that about Symphony of the Night. That's you have to get to a save room. But in this, it's like about manipulating your save. Like, if you screw up, you can load your save you just made and redo it again and do it a little bit better. And I totally do that. And that's kind of how I learn the game. I like repeat sections and then I can play it on hard later. So I really like that about it. But this game punishes you for that. I thought that was so cool. Instead of giving you ink cartridges for the typewriter. Yeah. You have unlimited saves, but if you use your unlimited saves, you don't get a good rating at the end of the game.
It rates on how many times you save. Yeah. Time to completion and how many times you saved. Yeah,
yeah. Well, at least it shows those stats, and we are still testing to see like what it tells you specifically how to get an S rating based on time, but I wonder how much saving affects that. Mm-hmm. It's really cool to think about.
Does it unlock anything, or is there anything?
Yeah, there's like,
I don't know if this is a spoiler or not.
No, I won't even talk about things in specifics.
Yeah.
But the original game had all these unlockable characters and modes, and what we can see in the menus right now is like, do this, and you'll be able to unlock a mode. It just says what it is. So
that's cool.
We are actually working on documenting that right now. So we'll have it in our big strategy guide, which I'm helping with this time. I really liked working on that.
The original game had the A and B modes. They don't call that, they don't refer to them this way in the remake. It's the main game and then the second game.
Yeah.
And the way you're supposed to do it is you play through one of them first, Leon or Claire, and then you go play through the second character in the second game mode.
Yes, you only play Leon, then Claire, or Claire, then Leon, and then you get a little bit of a mix-up for the other one. But you can just play them both from the start in parallel. You can't choose either one.
Which is what I did, but that's not how it's intended. Like, when you play through the game first time with either Leon or Claire, you've seen probably 80% of the game. The other like 20%, 10 to 15% is in the other character. And the only difference is in the middle of the campaign, each of them meet a unique person that they travel with for a while. And then you actually play the other person for a while. It's different for Leon and Claire. But other than that, the game is entirely the same for both of them.
And then the second scenario, they just change the locations of stuff.
You enter the first area, the police department, from a different way, and then some items are rearranged. Mm-hmm. But you still have to do the main puzzles to exit the police station.
And they're different.
You still go through the sewers, but there are no new enemies, no new boss fights, no new characters that you meet. There's just...
different weapons make a difference, though.
Well, that's what I was going to mention, and then at the end, in the second game, is like the real ending, the true ending, where there's a little bit more
fleshed out. Which presumably,
is very funny, I think. I think the real ending, I found it very humorous.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
I want to know after the show.
I'll tell you what it is. Exactly. You will laugh.
Oh, no, you did tell me what it was. Yeah. I know there's more playthroughs, but I think some of them are really hard to unlock. Like in the original game, you can unlock this tofu playthrough, which is it looks like a leftover like model. It's like a big white box.
I think you only have testing during development.
Yeah, and I think for that, I looked it up, and at least on the GameCube version, you have to beat game six times. I think, and then do this other unlocking stuff too. I looked it up yesterday, and I was like, I don't know if it'll be the same. And that's, and again, we're trying to figure out how to unlock everything in the game, and that's what you do when you write a strategy guide. But I like how it has those other things in it.
Yeah.
And to get to them is going to be really cool. Mm-hmm.
I think people, one thing, I mean, I don't ever review games anymore, but when I did, it can be a very lonely process. You're one of the only people in the wild that didn't make the game playing the game. Mm-hmm. And, sometimes there's other people in the office playing, but sometimes there's not. It's like you're on your own. And if you get stuck, I think people in the public that play games are used to just like, ask a forum, ask a message board, send out a tweet, check an IGN wiki or Game Facts. But you kind of, you're just stuck. Like, you got to figure it out. There's no recourse, and it does feel lonely, and there's not a wealth of information just kind of at your fingertips, and it's hard. That's, an underrated challenge of reviewing games, in addition to, the deadline pressure is just...
Sure.
There's definitely been times where, even in, mobile games like Infinity Blade, I'm like, it's kind of unclear to me what I'm supposed to be doing, where I'm supposed to be going. And you sometimes have to resort to reaching out to the game developer or publisher, being like, look, I'm a little confused.
That's
by this.
Especially hard with games that have been localized from Japan or another country that's not English speaking, because they have different teams and they kind of filter it through all those. And sometimes they just come back with we can't answer that question.
So it's everything you're talking about right now, how to unlock the modes and characters, there's going to be a guide, and there's going to be people are going to figure that stuff out the second day that game comes out, because people are maniacs.
Yeah, they can marathon it.
Right now, we don't people need to understand you don't always know. That's not handed to you. You have to figure it out. Brendan had to figure out how the Smash character unlocking worked. Yeah.
And as journalists, we do ask, and Capcom knows we want to know this stuff. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They also want to keep it kind of a secret, too. Yeah. Sometimes they tell us in reviews that we can't talk about the secret stuff or the unlockables specifically because they want people to discover those for themselves. It's a class of spoiler.
In this case, there was like a certain scene we weren't allowed to talk about in the review and then certain segments late in the game that they don't want you to spoil for people, which is totally understandable. So the game is super fun. The zombies look amazing. It's like so fun to explore all these different areas. It's genuinely scary. And the one thing that bugged me is just there's so much overlap between the two character stories. There aren't actually two campaigns. Like the whole objective in the police station is that there's a statue in the main hall with three slots for medallions. You have to find three medallions and then you can proceed. So if you did that as Leon first, when you come through as Claire, you shouldn't have to do that again, but you do.
Figure out a way for them to tell the story with a different puzzle so you know that, like, oh, well, Leon's off solving that puzzle. They don't get that clever about it. It's really video gamey how to handle it.
Like, you even have to, like, no spoilers, you have to destroy part of the police station to proceed. But then when you come through the second time as Claire, it's back and you have to destroy it again.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not an actual second campaign. There's
just
slight differences. The different weapons, though, definitely make it feel different. And I think Claire's feels more difficult because you don't have the shotgun with her.
Yeah. Yeah, it stinks. You have a you have a grenade launcher, which is cool.
Sounds great,
right? But think, like, they have to balance that because it's so much more powerful with having a lot less ammo. So you can make ammo for it and you can find ammo for it. But, like, compared to the shotgun, like, you always have those, like, few shotgun shells left on you to, like, do what you need to do. But with a grenade launcher, it's like, no, you got to stockpile that for, like, a boss or for a group of zombies, right? Because that's what that's for. It's not for individuals.
You could also do just my strategy and just never play that game. And just don't just don't play it.
Do you think it's scarier than 4 or 7?
We
were talking about that a little.
Yeah, I was going back and forth in my mind with that. At first, I thought 7 was scarier, but I mean, I don't know. I was playing Resident Evil 2 in daylight. It was like bright in my living room, and I was still like scared.
Yeah, it makes me tense.
Like the tyrant, like in the police station, the floors are all hardwood, and you can hear the tyrant like in the room above you, or he's in the room right next door, and you're like,
yeah, that sounds really good for that.
Yeah, that's what scared me the most. It was the sounds in the dark room where you know something and you're anticipating it. And it does, I mean, play the demo. I want to play the game, so this is a question I have for you. It's too early, probably, for Game of the Year, or was it, like, did you like it that much?
I mean, I loved the game, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's too early. It's the best game I've played this year.
Ah, there you go.
9 out of 10, so it's going to have to be in the hunt.
Yeah, but I mean, so I think for that reason, I'll want to play it, but yeah, I'm kind of like with you, Justin. I don't know.
There's too many games on this earth for me to get that stressed out by.
Yeah. And Kingdom Hearts reviewed today, so it got a similar score.
Yeah.
A little bit lower.
7.7, I think. Yeah. Jonathan really liked that one.
It's hard to be, I commiserate with Jonathan being just a Kingdom Hearts super fan. Like, he loves it. And so, does that mean that you end up overrating a game, or does that mean you're so hard on it?
Yeah, it must be tough.
Like, as someone that's really, really into it, sometimes those super fans actually ding, you know, the sequel more just for not, you know, living up to their expectations.
Yeah, like we all did with Mass Effect 3. I mean, seriously. Like, you know, that game probably on its own is pretty good game. It's got a silly ending. But after Mass Effect 2 and 1, people had a lot of high expectations for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I actually been looking, I watched our video review and I've been watching our guides team play that game. It kind of has these platforming elements to it. Like, I mean, it's not really, it has, first of all, it's combat, which is nice. You know, it's not turn-based. And you jump around, you get like an expanded repertoire in how you can move around. And it kind of looks like a little bit like a good Banjo-Kazooie type game. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's pretty neat.
Are you gonna play it?
I don't know. I'm thinking about it. I kind of like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like how it looks. It's just I don't like the Disney settings too much. Yeah. And that's weird because I do like some Disney stuff. I really like you know, like how Snow White looks or like something like that. Like, I think Disney has like some really cool eras.
Yeah.
And I love like the Aladdin game for Super Nintendo or for Genesis, I should say.
Yeah. I'm not gonna play Kingdom Hearts either. What really impresses me about that game is each Disney world is its own little, like the Pirates of the Caribbean world is like a little mini Assassin's Creed Black Flag. Like you get on a ship and it's got upgrades and it's got its own systems and like its own whole thing going on.
Yeah.
And then all the different worlds have like a different little twist, you know. And Jonathan in his review says that some of them are better than others, but like. Mm-hmm. that's amazing that they crammed, you know, all these little subsystems into the
game.
Did
you see the little tangled cutscenes in his review? Like, those look like, I mean, they look very cinematic. It's super cool.
But that's what he was saying a little bit, is that when I was chatting with him about him, because, yeah, he's a huge super fan, he was saying, yeah, your expectation almost makes it harder.
So hard.
Because, yeah, you look at, like, what Disney's doing and then what games are doing, and it goes back to our conversation a little bit last week. You're like, oh, I wanted this because I've seen this maybe elsewhere and stuff like that. So it does make it different, I think.
And Jonathan also made a great point that the game's graphics, which are incredible, like the worlds just look amazing, in some ways almost work against the game, because when it was in the PS2 and the Disney worlds looked more crude, your expectations for the level of storytelling that game needed to hit were lower. Yep. But now that the game worlds actually look, you know, almost as good as the CG movies do, you notice the disconnect between, well, the storytelling isn't quite up to,
yeah, like the,
you
know, Toy Pixar Story team didn't write it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, but it looks like Toy Story still. That's an interesting way of looking at it, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. But,
since I had low expectations, maybe I'm more excited to
play it. Shot.
I don't know, it just looks like it has some Final Fantasy stuff in it that I like.
Curious to get your perspective of, if you play it and you're like, this game's great, so fun.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Let totally us know. Be a valid. Right. Give us an update if you do play it.
Okay.
When is it out? Is it out next week?
The very, very end of the month. I don't recall which day, but like early, the 29th or something.
Next
like that.
Friday.
Early review. And first time on Xbox. So.
Maybe it's not Friday.
For, yeah.
Sorry. Gamers. I don't know.
Is that true?
I think so.
No.
You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free, as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop.
All right, moving on.
That's
it is
true.
It is another week, another awesome lineup of indie games announced for Nintendo Switch, including CrossCode, which weren't you just telling us about last week, Justin?
Yeah, game.
And I said, sounds great. I'll play it when it comes to Switch.
There you go.
Get that chance sometime
soon. They
saw
the podcast and called up Nintendo.
And just, hey, yeah.
It's a quick
those
call.
Guys, those GameScoop guys want CrossCode on Switch.
They did a cute thing where there's an enemy in the game that looks like a hedgehog, and it's called a hedgehag. So just a little fantasy spin on a hedgehog.
Gotcha.
And they say, the number, like last year, like last December or something, they're like, our game will come to Switch when hedgehogs fly. And then in their trailer, the Switch version has flying hedgehogs in it. And so that was like their little cutesy way of like sort of lying to people, but also just, you know, you can't announce something before it's time to announce it. So.
Yeah.
And you've played this.
Yeah.
On Steam.
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel like a Secret of Mana type game?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's like, it's by far the best game of 20, like the most overlooked game of 2018. Like, it deserves, if you go back and look at the timeline for a game like Hollow Knight, that game was not popular when it came out, and it like built up over time. And I think CrossCode has a chance of being a game like that, that it just gets discovered, you know, 3, 6, 12 months after it came out.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Does it lend itself well to Switch? Do you think this is where the home will
like
be?
Like D-pad and everything will work?
Yeah, it's an action RPG with an action combat system. So you're swinging a sword and shooting a little disc out in real time. It's great. It's amazing.
Nice.
It's like part bullet heli. Oh, man. So good.
And I'm not sure if that got a release date or not, but at least it's, we know that's coming.
Yeah.
But what did get release date is Wargroove.
Woo!
And this is the Advance Wars, like, that was, I think it was announced 2 years ago.
Long time ago.
Before the Switch was even out. Now it's finally coming February 1st.
And by the way, I work at IGN. I know a lot about video games. I thought that game was a Switch exclusive. It's not.
No,
it's coming. It's coming out all over the place.
Yeah, I think one of the platforms is delayed, but I don't know exactly which one. But we at least know it's hitting Switch February 1st. I've actually been playing a lot of it. I don't know what all I can say, but I would probably, you know, they're trying to fill a gap in Nintendo's library. Nintendo hasn't made an Advance Wars game in a long time.
Yeah, that's great.
When I don't
think, if you like Advance Wars, I think you should probably check this game out.
I'm a gigantic Advance Wars fan. Ran an Advance Wars fan site for over a decade. I won't plug it because it's actually offline now. But
not much point in plugging it.
You could plug the Internet Archive version of it.
Well, and it's a sort of a point of pain for me. I don't dislike Fire Emblem, but I've always been an Advance Wars guy, and Fire Emblem seems to have kind of taken over.
It really did.
It's the same team. It's Intelligent System, so yeah. You know, it literally took over in the sense of you know, what is that studio working on, but also just in the mindshare of Nintendo fans, Fire Emblem kind of seemed to win and it became the SRPG franchise. And it
must be because of Smash.
Smash, it's all intertwined now, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's definitely painful for me. And so I'm pleased to see that Wargroove seems to be, none of the other strategy RPGs have sort of scratched that Advanced Wars itch in the same way that I've played.
Yeah.
And Wargroove, I think, has the best chance of doing it. So this very excited.
Whereas Advanced Wars is a cartoonish modern military setting with tanks and jeeps and machine guns and stuff. Wargroove is a fantasy setting.
Yeah. That doesn't bother me.
Swords, shields, arrows for your range
the
weapons.
More disposable units, more units on the field. You know, Fire Emblem is a little bit more, it's not actually small maps, but Advance Wars can have, you know, dozens of units on a side and you're just sort of smashing them into each other and it's really fast and snappy. And Fire Emblem has always been a little bit slower and more tactical. And so I'm happy to sort of get back to that other SR, you know, strategy game.
It's just Advance Wars where your unit's health is also their attack power. So the attacker always has the advantage.
I've only played the Advance Wars that has the kind of World War I-ish tanks and stuff setting. It was on DS.
So that was the last one that was made.
There was Dual Strike, and then there was Days of Ruin.
Days of Ruin, which they leaned into a little bit more realistic, a little bit more serious tone in that game than the first two, I think.
Yeah, I remember that being that way.
Anyway, Wargroove. February 1st, that's really good. And then they announced a new SteamWorld game.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the SteamWorld games are awesome.
Yeah.
And they're just doing something different again. So
Dig, RPG?
Dig was like a Metroidvania platformer, and Dig 2, of course. Heist was a side-scrolling turn-based strategy game.
Heist is in my backlog. Haven't played it.
Heist is really good.
And this is like a Darkest Dungeon type game?
Well,
it's
a role-playing card game.
I hadn't played Darkest Dungeon. But
it's a card game.
It looks more like a traditional RPG.
With the cards mechanic, yeah.
But it didn't show like a top down overworld situation. It was kind of walking left to right and just encountering enemies. From what the trailer shows,
yeah,
so
that's a good point.
I can't tell if it has the JRPG type thing going or if it has more of a Darkest Dungeon just encounters.
Yeah, we don't know yet.
Yeah, we just know the broad strokes role playing card game. But I like everything those guys do. They said this is the fifth
game.
That
team knows what they're doing.
The developers Image and Form Games, and so working backwards, there was SteamWorld Dig 2, Heist. SteamWorld Dig.
They did this one.
And then what's the first game on DS?
They made a mobile game. If they're counting that.
Maybe that
developer, I had this crazy epiphany moment where I was like, I wonder what Image and Form did before SteamWorld Dig. And I looked them up and they made a mobile game for iPhone that I reviewed and liked a lot and never connected the dots between, it's called Ant Farm or something like that where you can.
So it didn't have the robots in it.
No, it's completely different. You control an ant colony.
Hmm. What year is that?
2011, 2012.
Okay, it's a while ago. Anyway, another game to put on your radar is called Inmost. Did you guys take a look at this game?
No, I didn't see Inmost.
I was showing it to you yesterday. This is the
which one was
side-scrolling, like macabre pixel art.
Oh yeah, yeah, it was
dark.
Yeah, I remember that.
Horror-looking pixel art game. It says there are three main characters, each with their own unique gameplay styles. You scale the environment by sneaking past enemies, luring them into deadly traps, solving puzzles, and slicing.
That's the one that looks like Rayman. New Rayman.
New Rayman. No, it's pixel art.
Oh, okay, never mind. Yeah. There was a different one announced that's from X-Rayman developers that has that exact same 2D style, and I thought it also had multiple playable characters. Maybe not.
This one that I'm talking about is called Inmost. It's coming out this year sometime.
Got it.
There's a game called Forager. That looks cool, and it should be appealing to those Stardew Valley fans out there.
Forger looks great. That is a just-an-ass game.
2D open-world game. It says, inspired by exploration, farming, and crafting games like Stardew Valley, Terraria, and Zelda. It says you start small and improve your base, skills, equipment, network of friends, and enemies. That one's coming Q1 2019.
It looks like, I haven't played it, but to me, watching the trailer and stuff, it looks like Don't Starve. Like a little bit more cutesy, you know, casual version of Don't Starve.
I see. And then coming very soon is the next game from the Bloodstained Curse of the Moon guys. It's called Dragon Marked for Death. And that one's out at the end of this month, January 31st.
Is that an original game?
Yeah, well, as far as I know. And it looks like a really beautiful pixel art side-scrolling, maybe hack and slash game. Like that sort of action game.
We're in a new era of pixel art games. I mean, I know that Shovel Knight and everything was happening, but so many, like, was it like the majority of the games announced for the Switch were like,
well, yeah, I mean, this is also being reflected through my personal taste because there were other games. These are the ones that were most interesting to me.
Yeah, that's why it's like, but it is like half of them have that kind of art style.
I think Goat Simulator is out now on Switch.
Yeah.
Old Goat Simulator.
I haven't played that one yet. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com, just like Eddie did. Do you think it's Eddie Van Halen?
It could be.
I mean, it could be.
Yeah.
It's probably not.
But it could be. Can't rule it out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, Eddie Van Halen could be writing in under an assumed name. Any of the letters.
He could be writing in as Sammy Hagar.
That's true. All of these are possible. Okay. Eddie says, what's up, Omega Cops? Been a listener for the last 10 years. Rarely miss a week. Keep up the great work. Wanted to put a thought to the show. Has Red Dead Redemption 2 hurt the franchise? The game is undoubtedly an amazing technical marvel, but it's one that is almost universally seen as impressive, but not fun to play. The game hides an intricate world behind slow pacing that makes it hard to sit down and play, few travel options, and endless systems that don't really matter. Has anyone really kept Arthur's weight up or perfectly maintained their guns? Few people I know have finished it. The buzz around this game fell off pretty quickly, and there just isn't the same fascination with it that followed Red Dead Redemption for seemingly ages. While not the disaster Mass Effect Andromeda and Fallout 76 were, is the Red Dead Redemption brand somewhat tarnished due to the game design choices of this sequel?
Good question.
Oof. I mean, we did find out NPD this week. It was the best-selling game of 2018.
Yeah, and got tens everywhere. So that makes it different than Mass Effect Andromeda.
I was going to say.
That's not a great comparison.
It's not. Did he make that comparison?
He said it is different. You know, it does. Yeah. It's not quite at the level of like.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said. So he was making a distinction.
It's not a disaster like those games were.
I was
hugely successful.
Yeah.
But like, if they announced a Red Dead Redemption 3 2 years from now, what would people's excitement level?
I don't think there will be one.
You don't think there will ever be a sequel?
No. I mean, what is it? They're going to set it in the 1920s?
They do run out of, you know, the Wild West is a finite, space to explore.
They could tell a different story, though. I'm just making a joke. But I think this is not as exciting for them to make another Red Dead, perhaps, as another.
I mean, it's so big and comprehensive and such like a thorough look at many different sides of the Wild West that it feels like there's like nothing left to say. And maybe Red Dead 3 will tell a completely new, you know, crazy Wild West story and I'll have to, you know, eat my hat someday. But it's like, it's so definitive. Like, I think Red Dead 2 is it.
Can you eat your hat is a good 20 questions. I was going to say that I hope that the market doesn't dictate what games the Red Dead team wants to make. I know that's not the case, but like if they really loved that game and loved making it, which you can feel in a lot of parts of that game, I hope they get to keep doing it. Because that's how art should work. It shouldn't be that a bunch of, you know, people were disappointed with your art. Like you should keep on making your great art. You know, we shouldn't all be corporate about this all the time.
Well, that's the challenge. I think even thinking of Call of Duty, I referenced that game because they got rid of their campaign, which was like people were really upset about that. But a lot of these games now, I mean, think of the investment time and who knows how long, like how long was Red Dead in development? Is there confirmation? Yeah. It's like, it felt like
25
forever.
Years.
Sure. Let's go
with
that.
First one was out
since Lemmings, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Since Lemmings.
Yeah. So it's been a while, but thinking of that and then it maybe having this quick window of selling and then that's it. Like when did it release? Like what was the release date officially on Red Dead?
No one knows.
It was
in October.
In October? Okay. So that's 3-4 months.
Flounder.
But still, if you think about like, okay, you spend like how many years developing this game and like all of a sudden like it fizzled out in 3 or 4 months. That still feels like, okay, like from an investment standpoint, your brain is going, wow, that didn't take long if there's not like, you know, battle royales or whatever else that's coming to the game to make it like active over the next like few years.
I think there's, I don't want to spoil anything, but crazy things happen at the end of that game. And not just with like the story.
How do you know?
Well, because, you know, I work here and stuff gets spoiled for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I fell off it. And so
I want you to, after this, I want you to account. Like, just give us an account of the events of the game.
And then I'll tell you.
No,
it's like I'm in the like same boat. I know.
No, I think I would do a better job than you. Like, I know. Like, anyway, there's stuff that happens with your character and your gang that's crazy, but that's not even what I'm referring to. I'm referring to just crazy stuff in the world that, like, in GTA, everyone on Earth was talking about it and speculating about it, and it makes
me... Yeah, like the UFO stuff in GTA.
Like the UFO stuff in GTA, Red Dead has stuff that's equally crazy like that no one's talking about, and there's not any buzz about, and there's no, like, trying to dig into it, and so that makes me think, just anecdotally, that, like, almost everybody fell off before they got to the post-game stuff where you're starting to discover all these crazy, weird breadcrumbs that seem to be building up to something that, like, that surprisingly few people are digging into.
Yeah, that's very true.
Like you were saying, Sam, you hope the market doesn't dictate the future of Red Dead. We always talk about how Rockstar is in the unique position of being able to spend unlimited time and resources making things. So, if anyone could make whatever game they wanted to, it could be Rockstar.
But you don't see them making Max Payne still that. Yeah. I don't know what their motivations are, but I hope the motivation is for their team to say, like, we love Westerns and we want to make the most beautiful Western you've ever seen. And that's what they get to do.
Yeah.
Hope that's what they get to do.
Now, even comparison to Mass Effect Andromeda, though, I think people expected, I mean, watching that unfold, that was crazy because I ended up doing a lot of coverage on that. Mm-hmm. They basically didn't do anything for it after at all. Like, it was like,
they canceled the DLC.
Yeah. Canceled, like, cut our losses. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's pretty real when these kind of things happen where you expect something out of it a little more and then it doesn't. Like, no one would have expected that of Mass Effect Andromeda on release. Mm-hmm. Like, the hype for that game was massive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty huge.
Yeah, it's true. Same with Fallout 76.
True.
Red Dead's gotten two battle royales.
That's true?
Yeah.
We'll have to see what happens.
And one that was just knives and arrows. That was nearer to launch, and then they just got the regular one.
So I heard about that. So is that, like, gaining a lot of traction? Are people playing?
That's what I was going to say. Is like the online is going to be, you know, we'll see. Like, that's an evolving situation by design.
Yeah. Right?
So
I think GTA Online also had a slow start.
It did.
GTA Online was broken as shit for months, you know, and then they cleaned it up, and now it's still going strong years and years later. Yeah. And Red Dead started from a, you know, online wasn't broken at launch. It was fairly strong at launch. Mm. But are people playing it? Do people care? Like, is it making money for Rockstar? Like, are they going to have enough new substantive things to sort of keep that game in the news for years and years? We'll just have to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, this is Steven. Do you think it's Steven Seagal?
Could be.
Steven Tyler. How does he spell it?
With a V.
Mm.
So now we know who
Tyler.
Steven says, I have a wife who doesn't understand why people play video games. I still play, but recently she has come to believe... CJ's going to blow a gasket.
Getting close to home?
It's going to be good TV if he spits
this up. Okay, I got us all. We're good. Continue.
Why did you react that way?
Because, I mean, I'll tell you after. Keep going.
Wait.
Take a big drink.
Oh, is this you riding in under a...
No, it's not my alias. Assumed name.
I still play, but recently she has come to believe the amount I play is unhealthy. Mm. On average, I play anywhere from 5 to 10 hours a week. Some weeks I can play more, depending on if a new game has been recently released. I personally don't think this is an unreasonable amount of time or unhealthy. I was wondering if the Omega Cops think there's a certain amount of time when playing video games becomes unhealthy or unreasonable. Thanks for the amazing show every week.
Does the C in CJ stand for Steve?
That's my middle name.
Writing in is CJG. Wait, no, that's too obvious.
C
Gibson.
I mean, so this is an interesting thing. Now, I have kids. Justin, you have kids. Does he say there was no mention of children in this equation?
No,
this is what I was going to get into as well.
That is a huge caveat to the situation, I think.
In what way?
Because when you do have children, especially once you have two, Justin, you're experiencing this, you get to be like, oh, one for you, one for me.
Yeah, you got to divide and conquer.
Exactly. When you have three, you're like, oh gosh, mass chaos.
Yeah, it's impossible.
I would say that if that is a concern right now, he probably has kids.
I think 5 to 10 hours, it has less to do with how many hours you're playing video games and more to do with is that habit, that video game habit or whatever, you know, habit is in your life. Is it spilling over and affecting
Yeah.
You know, or the parts of your life that you that you can't afford to neglect.
Interfering with your responsibilities.
Your work.
Are you ignoring your wife?
Yeah, your love life or you know, whatever the case may be. So if 5 to 10 hours allows you to be an effective parent and husband and, you know, employee at your job, then great. But if it doesn't, then maybe not so great. So it has less to do with the game time, in my opinion.
Very true. Yeah, because I like, even before I started working at IGN, I played a lot of video games. I was a freelance guy, so I worked and did the gaming in the evening. When children are younger, super difficult. But then also it depends on, your stages of life, like when you got married, your expectations. Like, there's a lot of things. I think to put a number on it is impossible.
Yeah. There is a bias against, like, you know, people will, the Americans will sit and watch television all evening.
Yeah.
And, like, it's fine. But then if you sit and play a video game or watch Twitch all evening, kind of people have a tendency to be like, attribute that to, like, that guy's a loser or whatever.
Sports fans, I imagine, watch 5 to 10 hours of sports a week.
Easily. So it's like, well, and think about this. Do you guys all have cable? Do you have cable television?
I do.
No.
You do? Mm-hmm. Okay, what do you mostly watch on TV now?
The Bachelor.
There you go. No, this is fair. I watch The Bachelor also with my wife, but
if your wife's upset by how much you watch The Bachelor.
Yeah, that's what bugs her, yeah.
Now, I'm assuming your wife is also watching The Bachelor, right?
Yes.
Just checking.
Not watching it myself.
Okay.
Nobody says that.
Never know. But, I mean, now you can do, like, internet TV, where if you do have that, you can just, you know, stream The Bachelor live. So it's funny. I don't know of many people who have cable. So, yeah, that TV reference, like, my dad would watch sports all the time, and that was, like, a non-issue. Mm-hmm. 5 or 10 minutes of, like, or 5 or 10 hours of gaming now seems a little bit more common. People are watching it in different places, like Twitch and streaming services on your phone. So I don't know if he factors that in as well, too, right?
I mean, like, I kind of think, like, I actually don't, me and my wife don't really argue. We totally have, like, a partnership in our marriage and stuff. But when we used to argue before we had kids, that was one of my, I'm like, I'm not into sports.
Yep.
Like, a football game could be on every single Sunday, you know, afternoon and into the evening, and Monday night football and Thursday night football. And then there's another sports. Like, there's people that's their lifestyle, and that's just not my lifestyle.
Yeah.
You knew who you were marrying. You can't be upset about these
my
video
wife
games
did too.
In the house.
Yeah, we had that conversation before. Now it's like it's a non-issue.
And then once you have kids, you don't have time to do anything. So
you just hope for the best.
It just solves itself. You just throw some child kibble on the
something
floor.
Something like that.
Cheerios.
I mean, ultimately, like, what then usually happens, everybody's like, oh, why don't you get your wife into gaming? And so that happened to me a little bit, but my wife is into mobile games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is an expensive hobby, let me tell you.
By the way, my gosh.
Yeah.
Anecdotally, on my bus, every single day, half my bus is playing Pokemon Go. That game is still, still has a hold of people.
Wow.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
On the bus?
Yep. They cheat it because if you're going too fast, they know you're not on foot, and so
the bus moves pretty slow.
But the bus moves slow enough that you're able to swipe Pokestops and stuff.
Yeah, communication is the key. That's, I think, the verdict.
Just bottle it all up,
swallow it deep down into the pit of your being,
and it'll just never
acceptance.
Come out.
This is Joe in Tasmania, Australia.
Whoa,
yeah, Taz. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You think it's Joe the Volcano?
There it is.
It's Joe the Volcano. Yes. No, isn't it Joe versus the Volcano?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I didn't even get the joke right.
Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Meg Ryan? Who's the girl
in
that?
Nobody knows.
I can't remember.
It's not Meg Ryan.
I have seen it, though.
They were only in the two together.
It, all.
It is Meg Ryan.
Oh, thank you. They did three of them together?
Thank you, Producer Dan.
I thought they only did two.
She plays two characters in that movie.
For years, by the way, I didn't know that Sleepless in Seattle and You've Got Mail were different movies.
It's fair.
That's fair. Joe says, he wants to know, why do we say we beat a game? Mm-hmm. Says, I would like you to just discuss why people, including GameScoop, use the term beat the game. You don't beat a book or beat a movie. This has always bothered me. Dungeons & Dragons players don't beat the Dungeon Master. The DM is there to facilitate a player's journey through a game world, just like a video game. When I finished Skyrim, I felt like I had completed a game. I hadn't beaten it because it wasn't a competition between me and the game. Why does everyone use this term to imply a me versus everything mentality? If I stop playing a game, I don't feel like it beat me. Why do you use this term?
It's because games did used to beat you.
Yeah, the game.
Absolutely.
If you give up on a game, the game absolutely beat you.
100%.
No, I mean, look, man, like, language is fluid, and, like, words have multiple meanings and change and shift over time. We were talking before we started recording about how why are the end strong enemy at the end of a level called a boss? It makes no sense if you actually think about how the language of that word boss, but it's just become...
It makes,
It's taken on its own meaning, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Bowser. At least he has like underlings, but yeah. He's not like their boss, right?
It
like,
may
he doesn't pay them, or maybe he does. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
But just like a monster that you fight in Dark Souls or Bloodborne, like that's not a boss.
They're bosses, right? Literally. Even though they're not bosses in terms of.
But I don't know where the term beat comes from, because like in the early days, like in the arcade days, no one was beating in a game. You're just trying to get as high a score.
No, I think that is where it came from.
Think so?
The arcades?
Yeah. Well, first of all, like that's where the idea of the player versus the computer came from. So that's a really important part of this, right? Now, Pong was player versus player. So that was like before that, it was all fun. But then once AI was around, you could play Breakout, you play it against the computer, you get as far as you can get. Mm. And then once games came home, then you could play them so long that they put a little ending screen in.
Yeah.
And that's when you completed the game or beat it, or, and as they said in Britain, as we were making fun of, solved it.
Yeah.
And that, all that comes from, I mean, you also solve a puzzle. You know, if you get a jigsaw puzzle, or if you have a puzzle box or something, you solve it.
I beat that jigsaw puzzle.
And the beat, I think, is a little bit more competitive term that comes from us versus computer that is used for it. I think that's where that comes from. And you say stuff like, I beat cancer.
You beat, you
say stuff like that. You know,
you beat your opponent in chess or at basketball or whatever. And so when you have a digital opponent, it makes sense to translate it to that.
Exactly. It's from competition.
Use it in football. The Patriots beat the Chiefs, right?
I wonder if, you know, you mentioned AI. Like, obviously, Pac-Man is the first high-profile example of, like, you know, those ghosts are trying to move in a human-like way. They're trying to move in a way that mimics, you know, this intelligence there, those ghosts are thinking.
Gotcha.
But I wonder if that's, what's the earliest example of video game AI?
Well, that's what I was wondering, because when you say arcade, I'm trying to think of an game that wasn't like a core sucker where, like, typically speaking, you can play those games forever.
It would be like Space Invaders and before that.
But that doesn't have any, they're not trying to move in an erratic way.
They're not reacting to you, they're moving on their path.
They're cleverly moving left. Yeah. And then right.
Centipede before or after Pac-Man?
Centipede is the same year, 1980.
That was 78.
And that's by
Atari. I trust you more than me.
And of course, Namco and Midway published Pac-Man. So those
that's really interesting. Even like Asteroids doesn't have any AI working against you, because you shoot the asteroids and they break up into smaller pieces and separate.
Yeah, Pac-Man definitely has things going after you. The Centipede... Everything in Centipede is based on not your position, on its own motion. The Centipede works based on the mushrooms. The spider just bounces. The flea just fills in mushrooms. So.
And the fact that their AI is incredibly rudimentary, but they were different. They had different personalities, right?
Yeah.
Like the red one's hunting you, and then Clyde's just an idiot.
And how that actually works is one is saying, reduce the amount of distance between you and Pac-Man all the time.
Yeah.
Another one is saying, well, do that, but always take turns in a way to get there.
Yeah.
Like it's like they all have a slightly different.
And one's just moving wherever he wants.
They all chase you in a different way, which is really cool, though. Like, wow, that's what a great idea that is. But that gets back to, I think you versus the computer, and you're putting in a quarter, which was, over a dollar back then.
Yeah.
And you put that in, and then you're like, as far as you can get, it's like you're winning that time, but eventually you lose to the computer.
But
like, that is what happens in arcade games. That's what was so different about, as I was mentioning, home games. Like, a completion screen was a big deal when I was a kid. Like, 1986, 1987, when Super Mario Brothers came out.
That's what I was thinking.
Say that it has an ending.
I know.
Like that was unique.
I don't feel like I beat any of my NES games.
Oh.
You'd probably beat Mario 2 if you had that.
Maybe.
That's pretty easy.
I like...
You beat Mario 3?
I don't know.
Do you not remember the ending for Mario 2? To me, that was
good. And then there's a reward for beating a game, which
For me, like, it's weird when you say that, because score is something that... It's not in games like anymore as often, but it is something you think of, like, that's where I think maybe it comes from. Mario had a score, like Super Mario for NES.
Yeah, all
had
those
a score.
Early NES games do.
It's weird. You could play the game
Mario
over
3
and
has
over
a
again.
Score.
It does. Yeah, and now your brain probably never thinks about it, but
some vestigial.
Yeah, in competition standpoint, I remember playing in competitions and it would go by, did you beat the game? Did it end? But Mario kept going infinitely. Your score, I think, kept accumulating. So
one of my favorite
play till your lives are gone.
Just modern gaming things. I attribute it to sort of the rise of Xbox Live Arcade is just the high score coming back.
Yeah.
And high score games coming back is such a great, just a great thing that wasn't just lost forever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. And gamer tags and scores. Yeah. We're all
games
kind
like
of
Ding
that,
Dong XL. Like,
Ding Dong XL.
Try to get on that.
We know the number 2 player in the world for that.
We also know the number 50 player in the world.
Is Jared now number 2?
Jared Petty's number 2 in the world.
He's number 1, I wonder.
Let's find him.
Well, here's the challenge, GameScoop watchers and listeners. Beat Jared.
Yeah.
Get that number one.
Was I? Oh, so getting back to his question about, you know, how
eating
do people
game.
Refer? I've seen, I don't see people talk this way, but people write differently than they talk. And I see on Twitter and on forums that people say credits rolling on blah, blah.
I rolled credits.
Yeah. And that's like
said
a
that to
new
me on, Resident Evil.
That's I'm cool. sure you can find examples of that going back decades, but that's the way that people refer to, you know, even me. Like, I'm like, oh, credits rolling on God of War. What an amazing experience. Like, that would be my tweet following the end of that game. To me, I think that's because games have, they're more of like a dialogue and experience. And like, you went on a journey together yeah. with like, you know, the game developer and the team that made that game. And it's less about like, yes, I overcame the challenge and saved the princess and beat the game. And more about like, you know, the adventure you just went on.
Yeah. Do you guys watch the credits?
Always. Mandatory.
Yeah, I like watching the credits.
Yeah,
I think they're really interesting.
I always watch the credits.
Yeah.
I always like when they add something to it, but I definitely feel guilty about skipping them.
Yeah. Yeah. I never skip them, but if they're rolling on for a long time, I may like make a sandwich or something.
Sometimes they have a scroll, which is nice.
Yeah. For the new games, it's crazy sometimes how long they will go. I remember
it's amazing.
I remember beating God of War. I think the post credit scene is almost 15 minutes long.
The Rockstar any Rockstar game, the credits go on forever.
I rolled credits on Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Yeah. And boy, I do watch the credits in games, but I did. I'm like, this is too much. I gave up. I gave up after a while.
All right, this is Andrew. He says, when I heard about the announcement of Far Cry New Dawn, I was both excited and disappointed. I was happy at the thought of getting a new Far Cry game since it is my favorite game franchise, but also disappointed that it is taking place in a post-apocalyptic setting. The one thing I've always loved most about the franchise mm-hmm. is its real-world settings and realistic nature from the mm-hmm. tropical island in Far Cry 3, caveman times in Far Cry Primal, and of course, Montana in Far Cry 5.
Okay.
With so many games in recent memory being focused on magic, dungeon crawling, and final smashes, it is very disheartening to see a franchise I love following the curve instead of following its own path. Have you ever been disappointed in the direction that a game or franchise you love has decided to go?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can give you such a concrete example.
Lay it on us.
Crackdown 2.
There you go.
So I have a theory about this. Like, Crackdown 2 is really maligned. People don't really like it. It's just forgotten. And that game, the original game, took place in, you know, it was very heightened reality, but a realistic-ish city, you know? Mm. You're a superhero in a city filled with, like, normal people. And the sequel was zombies. Like, zombies had overrun the town, and now you're mowing down zombies and running through sort of an apocalyptic scenario. And that made you feel, that made your superhero powers feel so less interesting, and you felt so less, like, you didn't feel nearly as powerful. Because you're running around a world filled with zombies and these fantastical elements, compared to the original game, where you felt awesome leaping over these, you know, buildings and doing awesome abilities when, you know, you were the only one that was special or different. And so I don't know how much of a point he has with Far Cry, because even 3 and 4, they were always like very sort of heightened in their sense of reality. But you being a superhuman and doing crazy stuff in a little bit more grounded scenario, I can understand how that would be less appealing than doing it in a more fantastical scenario.
Yeah. How about you guys?
The worst feeling is when a series changes and then it stays that way.
So what's an example?
Well, an example I don't agree with is one that I heard a lot about Resident Evil, and it's when it switched to 4, people were like, this is not a horror game anymore. It's not scary. And because the controls and the tank controls and everything were manufactured, you know, to make this like sense of fear, because you're just so overpowered all the time and you have to get good.
Yeah.
But 4 like makes you into an action hero basically, and
you can high kick.
Yeah, you can roundhouse. Yeah. So that's like an example of that, where it's like, and then the series.
But then it did come back around.
Yeah, it stayed with that for
4, 5,
through
6.
Some bad games. Yeah. Like, it made a bad game. 6, I think, is the bad game.
Each got worse, yeah.
And then 7 kind of tried to bring it back around, but it's not Resident Evil, like with the stuck camera and.
You know, at least it slowed things down. It's not an action movie.
And game. But that was like an interesting kind of nod to maybe we've lost our way.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. I think the Mario series did that in a way that we were just talking about the other day, where Super Mario World, I think, is the best example of having a really cool map filled with secrets. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it just never did that again.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I like how Mario 64 had the paintings and the castle too. So let's set aside the 3D games. Mm-hmm. The 2D Mario games have never gone back to having a cool overworld. They have this crappy, like, you look down at the world, it's like, there's the path next level. Maybe, like, in Mario U, there's, like, a side path or something.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Nothing like Mario.
So many secrets in Mario World.
So there was it in Mario U, but do you feel that just because it was something that was this is hard for me to say. Like, if you didn't experience it before, and this is always one with kids, mm-hmm. if you showed them the new thing, would they like the new thing or the old thing better? Yeah, like, if I showed them the Mario Wii U, would they like Mario World better?
Yeah. Does going back to play Mario World after playing all these other Mario games, does it hold up?
I think Mario World definitely holds up.
Hope so.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. But it's interesting. I mean, so I got to give my examples now with probably two real quick, though. Mm-hmm. Destiny 2, obviously. I can't not say it. It's a sequel.
People think really changed it enough to...
So the weird thing is they changed enough of it that people lambasted it as, oh, 1.5, you didn't change
it. Lambaste how they say it in Canada?
That's how they say, oh, lambasted is the new word again?
What? This is my...
There you go.
And see, now forever when CJ just there says something weird, he can blame it on being Canadian.
Lambasted. People were really upset at 1.5 Destiny. It didn't look like too much different from the original. But then when people got into it, they made it a little bit more approachable, made some executive decisions that people didn't like. So then I was like, oh, you changed too much. So there was this back and forth thing. Ninja Gaiden as well. I was a fan of that franchise. We got Ninja Gaiden 3 for Xbox, like the newer versions. Changed a lot of it. Now to the point where we're waiting for Ninja Gaiden 4. There's been Neo. There's been a whole bunch of other Tecmo games. We're kind of excited for maybe something in that space. But I don't know if they did a good job.
I don't know if this game... ever came out. What happened to Yaiba Ninja Gaiden Z?
Yes, Ninja Gaiden Z.
Is that a real thing?
It was, yeah. So even that got released after, I think it was in between Ninja Gaiden 2 and Ninja Gaiden 3.
Is that true?
Yeah, and it was like this weird kind of art direction style that was nothing like the Xbox versions. It was like cool for what it was, but again, expectation-wise, it didn't meet it. And so... Yeah, I mean, I see that a lot. I don't know the answer. It's weird. I don't like Ninja Gaiden 2 or 3 as good as 1. But in a situation with Halo, I liked Halo 2 better than Halo 1.
Halo is what I was going to name drop as well.
Yeah.
There's certain developers, you know, Bungie and then 343, that I just feel a little bad for because they get a little trapped.
Yeah.
Like, it's clear as day to anyone that Halo needs to change and evolve to stay contemporary and current. You know, that franchise has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
But they're sort of held hostage by their mega fans that, you know, every single, like, the reticle bloom on this gun is a little different. Time to kill is slightly different. You know, locomotion around the game map is slightly different. And like, they're not necessarily wrong to complain and pick those things apart, but it really puts the developers in a tight spot with certain long-running franchise that people are that are held, you know, to a really, really high beloved standard.
You know what else went down the wrong path for too long was Zelda.
That's the other one I was going to name.
Twilight Princess and then Skyward Sword.
Absolutely,
I think,
yeah.
Took the wrong ideas from Ocarina and Majora's Mask and then just made like great games with them, but that wasn't the right path. And I think Zelda, you know, is back on track now.
Mm-hmm. The thing with Breath of the Wild, I'm so curious to see where they go.
I didn't say it. I didn't say it.
No,
didn't say it.
You did
good. Aren't you wondering how we say the word that you said?
No, I mean, lambaste. Just say it.
We say it lambaste.
Lambaste. It's one of my absolute favorite games from this generation and one of my favorite games of all time. But this isn't what I want Zelda to be forever. Like, at some point in my life, I'm going to want it to kind of go back to, like, you know, there's dungeons and, you know, you're going through just the classic Zelda thing. So that puts Nintendo in an interesting position of, like, are we going to get a Majora's Mask? That's how we say it here in America.
He said Majora's interesting game. Yeah.
Are we going to get a Majora's Mask, you know, sort of esque twisted version of that game? Or, you know, where do they go from here? So, when you do something super, super different that's also really, really well received, it does put you in an interesting position in regards to like plotting out the future of the franchise.
Yeah.
I'm not, in Nintendo's case, they're going to be fine because they've been doing that with Mario and Zelda forever. But
Castlevania made that 3D game that was really bad.
They made a few. Yeah. And then they did Symphony of the Night, right?
Mega Man as well. Mega Man went to that space and was like, oh, no, don't do that. But
I've got one, Metroid Prime, Federation Force.
Mm-hmm. Woo! Oof.
People, we're not fans of that game. No, the Metroid Prime pinball was pretty cool.
Dude, love that.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Two tables in it.
Yeah.
Neat. Yeah. One more email this week. This is from Nolan. He says, I am a police detective who works for an agency in the Phoenix, Arizona metropolitan area.
Nice. I think we're giving away too much on Nolan here.
Nolan offered up this information. I often work long, stressful weeks. I play video games in part to clear my head and detach from the content of police work.
Yes.
In conjunction with video games, I look forward to your show every week as a way to ease a stressful time. I felt compelled to write to express my appreciation for you and the whole crew that put GameScoop together. GameScoop is a great show. I appreciate the quality put forth every week. Keep up the good work, and thank you. You're welcome, Nolan.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, thanks for your service, too. I'm from Phoenix, so shout out.
Stay safe out there.
Nice.
And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Carl. It's with a K. So that tells you a lot right there.
Which Carl is this?
It's probably Mortal Kombat.
Let the questioning begin.
Do you play as a human?
Yes.
That's good. Is this from before 1990?
No.
All right, so I got to do better. And one of the things that I've seen in the comments is that I got to ask and identify platform. We got to figure that out. When we do that, we do a better job.
All right, let's not go for a platform before 1990 then, because that won't make sense.
Should I use the disc-based medium question?
I love that one.
I know you do. Let me use that. Is it on a disc-based medium?
Yes.
Okay.
Was this game developed in Japan?
No.
Is this from after 2000?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
That's five.
Okay. So... would this be, say, Microsoft product on a Microsoft system?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Well, that was...
I know, I try...
I'm glad we got it.
I know. Just wanted to go right there, right away. All right. Risky, Sam, but let's do it.
Okay, so that leaves three Microsoft consoles. Did this game come out on the original Xbox?
No.
Two more.
Yeah, it's fine. Well, we only need one more question to get there.
That's true. Just ask it.
Does this game have sequels?
You son of a bitch.
Yes.
I'm just going to ask it. Yeah. Is it on the Xbox One?
No.
Right, okay, it's a 360 game. And when you, what was the Microsoft?
What about Microsoft Windows?
Did you ask? I forget how we phrased it. Is it next? Do we know that it's a 360 exclusive? Was it made by Microsoft?
I did. That's what I was trying to get at in like a roundabout way to determine if it was Xbox.
We don't really know if it's a platform.
So we don't know if it's platform exclusive.
Was okay. Let's just burn
the 360 game.
Was this game a 360 exclusive?
Yes. Okay. That's 10.
It's got sequels.
Yep.
Not made in Japan.
But you're a human. So I'm eliminating.
He plays a human.
A couple other
Master three, Chiefs.
Exactly.
Human.
But no, I don't, is he? Yeah.
Yes. What? Yes.
I know. But it's a super soldier.
That's fine.
Do we give this game above an 8?
Ooh, I don't know. I can't answer that one.
Would you give it above an 8?
Ooh, I like that.
Oh.
Would I give this game above an 8? I'm going to. I have not played this game, so I can't.
Oh, okay.
Also,
that's great. That's no. good.
So also, can I ask that multiplayer? Question? I'm sorry.
Does this have multiplayer?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Damon was the downloadable content editor at this time.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That means it's not very unlikely to be an Xbox Live Arcade game because you played it.
So we did say that it's an exclusive. So
we did not say that.
Oh, I thought, what question did
I
you
say
ask?
That?
Yeah,
you did.
It was exclusive to Xbox.
I blacked out when I was asking.
Yeah, no, so I was eliminating all the multi-platform games like Call of Duty and whatever else.
Yeah.
Do we ask if it's a first-person shooter or no?
No.
No, that's a good question.
Is this a first-person shooter?
No.
Okay.
Ooh, multiplayer, not first-person shooter.
Yeah, that eliminates
that's
a lot.
That's weird. Racing?
Racing. Could be Forza. Could be something like that. What else was... the launch window was a question last time that we asked. That was really good.
Was this game published by Microsoft?
Yes.
Okay. We got to get this.
Yeah.
Did they do... They do Forza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did that start on 360?
Yes.
Yeah.
Whoa, weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. It's been around. Is this game about cars?
No.
All right.
Okay. Huh. So not Halo. Not cars.
A Microsoft game that has multiplayer.
If Damon's feeling tricksy, it could be Gears of War.
Could be. Is this...
Damon's probably played Gears of War.
Okay, so I asked if it was a first-person shooter.
I was trying to figure out why you think...
Because first-person shooter.
Because it's third-person.
Yeah, I know.
It plays like a first-person shooter.
I should have
shooter.
Asked if it was a shooter then.
What else did Microsoft really do then? I mean, they did puzzle games.
I mean, Gears of War seems too obvious.
Pinata. Yeah. This one has multiplayer, though.
Yeah.
Should I ask if it's third-person?
It'd be 1 versus 100. Do you remember that?
This is 100.
That's good.
That game was fun.
Yeah. Or
bring it back, man. Like that was so ahead of its time. Think about like Bandersnatch. Now, like if there was 1 versus 100 on Netflix, just every evening.
Oh, I mean, it's like Trivia HQ.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Trivia HQ.
Didn't it have its own controller?
I never played with that. I played with a 360 controller.
I think it came out with like a weird thing because I remember seeing it in the office. I was like, "What the heck is that for?"
Totally ahead of its time.
So should we go puzzle or third person? because I feel like
you can do whatever you want, man.
You could just ask if there's shooting in it or something like that.
But see, I already asked if it was a first-person shooter, and it's no. So
it could still be Gears of War, though. That's the problem.
I know. Well, let's ask a puzzle one, because then is it a puzzle game?
No.
What in the world? How does that help us?
No, because
that's why I was trying to get you do a wider.
I know, but like, okay. I feel like now it eliminates anything that could have been
like Zuma. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, there's
one. Okay, it's my one air ball.
Five questions left.
Five questions left.
Yeah,
I thought for sure we were gonna get this.
15.
360 game published by Microsoft. Has multiplayer, mm-hmm. Not a first-person shooter,
not a puzzle game,
not a drivey game.
It's not Blue Dragon. Conker's Bad Fur Day thing
that did have multiplayer.
That weird Conker game.
Does this game have shooting in it?
Go ahead.
You shooting things in this game?
Yes.
So it still could be Gears of War.
Gears of War.
Should have added in.
What are we doing?
Why?
But it could be the Conker game, which had to reload it on Xbox.
Yeah, that's
it doesn't
I mean.
Have sequels, though.
Yeah, that's true. That was the last
one. Or maybe it does that I don't know about. I don't think so, though.
I feel like we could just guess a Gears game almost near the end if we have to here. Which is we got to eliminate all the rest.
Why don't you just ask if it's a third-person shooter?
Should we ask if it's violent?
Yeah.
Well, what did we just ask? If it had shooting in it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
that's pretty violent.
They're all violent, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, third-person shooter would potentially isolate Gears.
Could be Geometry Wars. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that'd be too easy.
At this point, I mean, we almost need to eliminate the other things it could be.
No, what are you talking about? I don't know.
I mean, here's the thing. We got three more. So if we ask a third-person shooter, we're guessing
it's
Gears
just fun
one
to
of
ask
whatever.
Questions that apply to other things.
It would be because there's not too many exclusives left. At this point, it might be, actually.
Dan's trying to get this show on the road.
Is this a third-person shooter?
Even though there is shooting in it, I don't think people consider this a third-person shooter like as a genre.
It's probably not Gears of War.
Shooting, and it's not a first-person shooter.
Got it.
What's the game with just the flashlights?
They did Banjo Nuts and Bolts the flashlights.
Yeah. Alan Wake.
But that didn't have multiplayer.
Is it not Microsoft, too?
I don't know. It was Remedy developed it, but I don't know if they published it.
Sam, don't forget the hack.
Yeah, have we mentioned this game already?
Are you asking about in what time period have we mentioned this game?
On the show or in 20 questions?
In the last 60 seconds.
On the show.
Have you mentioned this game on the show? Yes. Two questions left.
That drives me insane.
I
sit in this chair and I black out for an
it's
hour.
It has to be because...
It has to be what?
It can't be Gears. And they only mentioned Alan Wake. What other Microsoft...
It doesn't have multiplayer.
The Conker game is the other one that we mentioned.
Well, pretty much then we could just ask it if it's those two games, and hopefully it's one of them.
But it could be that we mentioned this in our previous discussions today.
This game has multiplayer. Could be Red Dead Redemption.
Mm-hmm.
Could be Red Dead. No, they didn't publish that. Never mind. That was.
And it has sequels.
Should we just ask the question, do we mention it during 20 questions?
Could be Geometry Wars.
Oh, that's the question we should have, because Ninja Gaiden was also.
Could it be Ninja Gaiden?
Yeah, it could be. The first one was.
This game has multiplayer.
360, though.
Yeah, it was console exclusive for a while.
Do you shoot guns?
I feel like everyone's ignoring
you. You do shoot guns.
This game has multiplayer.
Ninja Gaiden had some type form of it, but like,
really?
Not till 3.
Could be Crimson Skies. No, that was the original Xbox.
We didn't mention that.
Oh, you're right.
Crimson Skies is really good.
We didn't mention it, guys.
You're right. Okay. Thank you. Oh my gosh, my brain. I'm stuck on the exclusive
this
part.
The best.
Oh, it's not. I'm breaking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Two questions.
I want to know if we mentioned it in 20 questions, but then we have to make a guess after that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure. Let's do
it. Did we mention it in 20 questions?
No.
Oh!
All right. This is it.
Oh, my God. We have all right, the information we need.
I need the show notes.
No.
Why?
My notes.
Why?
Nothing. No. You
we
need to know.
We got to review the episode.
Did any of the Resident Evils have... No, they didn't. They weren't published by Capcom.
No, and they were. And they're shooting. They're third-person shooters.
What did we talk about this episode?
We talked about Kingdom Hearts and Resident Evil.
Yeah, those
This is really interesting then, entertainment for the audience right now.
And then we talked about all the indie games. Did it come up in the context of any... Crackdown.
Crackdown.
It's probably Crackdown.
Yeah.
Oh, it
did
is.
That have multiplayer?
No, because Ninja Gaiden was the first one was on the OG Xbox, not on 360.
Is it Crackdown?
So no Ninja Gaiden. I think it's Crackdown.
Is it Crackdown?
Yeah, I think it's good.
It's Crackdown.
Yes!
Justin, final. Guys, oh, man.
Yes. I reminded Sam.
We haven't won in a while.
The hack.
I reminded Sam of the hack. Yeah.
Okay, that's
nice.
I like what we had to ask. Did we hear this on 20 questions?
I was so caught up with the exclusive thing. I couldn't see all the other questions that Crimson Skies didn't fall into. Yeah.
The original Crackdown, 2007, published by Microsoft, but developed by, Real-Time World?
What's the multiplayer?
There's just a multiplayer mode.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Everything had to have it at the time.
You just run around that game world. It was great. I played it with my buds.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry for everybody that probably got that on question 10.
Yeah, we did fine.
No, I continued with my abysmal performance, and yet somehow, thank you, Justin.
A win's a win. You were very helpful. You got it narrowed down to Xbox?
The Xbox, yeah.
When you brought up Crackdown earlier on, I was like, ooh, now they're going to get 20 questions really easily.
We didn't.
No.
There's a dynamic when we have a person that hasn't played a whole lot on. They'll ask a really direct
specific
question about
the puzzle.
And when they get it, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Like sometimes, you know, like somebody will say, like, did this come out on PlayStation 3? And then you get it and you're just like, well, we don't have to ask 15 questions.
Yeah. Well, it's like I tried to rein by looking at the comment section your disc-based medium format question, because in the last four episodes you've potentially said laser disc or red disc or something, and everybody's like, just say optical disc. Which covers
a CD.
Yeah. So
yeah, because that covers the UMD also.
Exactly.
The important thing is that we won.
Truth.
Nice job. Thank you for the suggestion, Carl. And that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. I hope everyone has a great time playing Resident Evil 2 this weekend. Real quick before we go, I just want to remind all of you listeners and viewers out there how much I appreciate you guys. You guys are always super cool, super fun to interact with, whether it's on Twitter or the Facebook fan page or on YouTube. Yeah. Not everyone out there is a cool, chill person, but all of you guys are, and I really appreciate you guys tuning into all my stuff. So thank you, as always. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, CJ. Thank you, producer Dan. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game.
Stranger, I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.